story. Hey guys, my name's Audrey Chapman. I'm a recovered alcoholic. What's up, party people? I got a whole bunch of you. I've been sober since March 2nd, 2004, and I'm so grateful to be a part of the Mark Houston Recovery, Benchmark Recovery family, as well as just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm just delighted to be here tonight. And I sure wouldn't have told you that 9 years ago. I wasn't delighted in the least about nothing at all, you know. And so it's just a really cool thing to get to be here and be with people that I absolutely love and adore, and then my people, you know. It's just cool because I walk into this room and I don't know y'all, but I know y'all, you know. And that's pretty cool that you can step into this kind of facility, or you can go to an AA meeting or a CA meeting, and you walk in and you're amongst your friends. And that's a wonderful thing to be a part of for a girl that nearly drank herself to death and doesn't deserve to stand here, you know. So it's a testament to that program. I point over there, although the steps are back here, but y'all are with me. Anyway, where's my family members in the audience tonight? Any family members? No one wants to admit it. They're all like, oh, are you going to make me say something? No. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand. If you're a family member visiting people here tonight, awesome. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. They're like, what's happening? Nothing. We're not going to slap a bracelet on you. You don't got to stay. It's cool. Really and truly, guys, we overlook sometimes expressing our gratitude as recovered members of AA and CA and DAA, how much we owe you guys. Y'all are phenomenal doing what you do and standing beside us, and it's sure not easy, is it? Being the family member of an alcoholic or an addict, I see a lot of moms shaking their heads no. There's a lot of pain and a lot of heartache in that. And what I can tell you as a family member of some drunks and some dope fiends, you can get well regardless if they do or not. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And our hope is always that the alcoholic and the addict works the program and does what they're supposed to do so that the whole family can join in on this way of life. But the good news is that God is sufficient for all of us. I'll talk to you a little bit about what is my experience as a family member. I'm the daughter of two alcoholics, sister to two drug addicts, and nobody's clean and sober today. It's been a rough journey. And so I sympathize with you guys, and what I can tell you is how cool it is that you can get connected to, you know, regardless. So anyway, I'll get off that little soapbox for a minute. My story is really not that exciting. I was driving over here with Jonathan and Marcia, and I was like, I should think of something really fun and cool to talk about, because my story just bores me. It just does, because I think I've heard it so many times. I'm like, geez. Because it's just like everybody else's story. The circumstances are different. The faces change and the names aren't the same, but it's the same story. You know, and so I'll get on with it, and then we'll talk about what recovery is really like when you leave Mark Houston Recovery. I keep saying it. Okay. I'm sorry. A homage to Mark. I gotta give my shout out. When you leave Benchmark Recovery, there's a whole nother world out there that is amazing. When you can take all the things you've learned here and put them into real life application, it's pretty cool. I grew up in the country. Anybody else? From the country? Ma'am? Baba, come on now. Get your hand up. See you back there. Right, so I grew up in a small town out in East Texas. You guys know where Sulphur Springs is? Yeah, it's grown. They got a Chili's now. It's like big time. Big. But I grew up in a small town where there was fireworks on the square, and everybody went to Grandmama's house, and everybody knew everybody, and you bumped into folks all the time at the grocery store. Everyone knew your business. It was real obnoxious, but you loved it. And I grew up with two loving parents who absolutely adored me, and there was nothing wrong, right? I mean, there really wasn't, but internally I felt a discomfort for as long as I can remember. As long as I can remember, I've been just a little unright. Do you guys know what I mean by that? The alcoholic fanatic sitting in the room? A little uneasy, and not just something's a little off. And I kept wanting to point it to, like, outside circumstances. So kind of when the wheels came off in my world when I was about six and my parents divorced, I'm like, okay, I can pinpoint. This is why I'm not okay. My parents are divorced. My dad is an alcoholic. I have health issues. I have, you know what I mean? I suffer from an anxiety disorder. And I start pointing and drawing the dots, right, making correlations of why I'm not okay. And the reality is I suffer from an internal condition that drives me right up into the point that I pick up bourbon. That's the truth. I needed a shot of bourbon at 6 years old. Bad. Bad. I mean, wasn't anybody going to give it to me, but I mean, I needed it. And I didn't know that. I was always searching for something. There's something innate about us that we're always searching, right? Anybody else in here a thinker? Right? You just know there's something. You're just right on the cusp of it. And I was always searching, even at a very, very young age. I accelerated in school. I was always in, you know, the gifted and talented program. I was always excelling in sports. I didn't have issues. So why can't I get right? And I couldn't figure it out. And so this, I went on about my business. My parents divorced. Each of them remarried. Each of them had another daughter. There's nothing wrong, right? But the fact is, my parents love me. My step-parents love me. I got two new sisters. Life is good. I got everything I need, all the resources at my fingertips. That's the fact. The feeling is I'm the unwanted kid from the first marriage. You see how far the delusion is? It goes way back. I cannot see the truth and the false in every area of my life. I couldn't until I woke up to the 12 steps. I was in delusion for a very long time, and I was not all right. I went on about my business. I played sports. I grew up, you know, yada, yada. Wasn't that exciting. We moved to Denton. You guys know where Denton is?
Yeah.
Right. What's up? Shout out. We moved to Denton when I was in junior high, my mom and stepdad and sister and I. And I had trouble getting along with people. And so they moved me to a private Christian school because my mom was determined that I was going to toe the line and I was going to be a good girl and we were going to walk the straight and narrow. And I just didn't, you know. God love her. And I did the very best I could. I went to every chapel. I went to every Bible study. I memorized every scripture. I didn't have a problem with God. It wasn't an issue for me. But everybody that I could see in those little groups were getting something different. What I was getting was a host of knowledge. What they were getting was an experience about God. And I could never connect the dots as to why we did the same things, but I wasn't experiencing what they were experiencing. And what I later came to find out through a process of the 12 steps is there was too much within me blocking me from that power. I could not have had the experience that they were having. So I go to this private school, and I try to act right, and, you know, such is life, I don't. And so, you know, I go on, and I discover alcohol. And most people don't remember discovering alcohol. It's not a big discovery. But for a girl like me, it was the discovery. And I'm in a back alley with one of my stepsisters. She's from the wrong side of the tracks, and I love people like that. She's awesome. And so we're in the back alley with a little boy from down the street. He's got some dope, and I've got some liquor. And my world shifted drastically. And suddenly I'm okay standing where I'm standing, interacting with the people I'm interacting with, and it's like the world is right. It wasn't like it was a good night and we had some fun. I changed. You guys know what I mean by that? Where your shoulders drop and you can breathe in your own skin and the substance is the only thing that matters, whatever that substance is. And so it registers in my brain, I need to do this as often as possible without getting caught. Anybody else like to roll like that? Yeah, just Dang, right? Because my mother is on it. My parents divorced as a result of my father's alcoholism. And my mom had a close watch on me forever. She texted me last night, are you in Austin yet? Are you in Austin? What are you doing? Are you in Austin? Oh, God, I'm 31 years old. Text her back, yes, I'm here. You know, and she had a pretty close watch on me. My friends in high school used to call her McGruff the crime dog. She's like that mom that she would hug you and just, you know, sniff in you and trying to make sure. I was like, fuck, yes. But it is what it is. This is real funny. So I tried to drink and do what I do as long as I could without getting caught. It was difficult at a private Christian school. You got expelled for just looking at boys the wrong way. I mean, it was just hot mess. And so I did what I could do. And I never could quite get right and get happy. I quit sports. I stopped excelling in school. I stopped because I had found the thing. You don't know what I mean by that? It was the only thing. It was the only thing that mattered. But I couldn't continue to do it in the manner in which I wanted to. And I was so obsessed with it, I couldn't stand myself. This went on through high school, went on through college. And if you're like me, when things aren't right, I start shifting everything out here. You have to go. You have to go. You must come here. We need to change our people, places, and things. I just get all right. You know, and the problem is I change all that stuff, and I'm still here. unhappy because I suffer from an internal condition. It has nothing to do with those outside circumstances. So I spent a lifetime trying to shift that, changed majors, took 8 years to graduate from college, no doctorate, you know what I mean? You know, I majored in everything, like everything. I got the degree though. Forever, my parents still tease me about it. But I was always shifting all that kind of stuff around. And I started getting into some trouble. And if you've never been in trouble, please understand that this is not a part of alcoholism. It's not a part of drug addiction. If you happen to get in trouble, it's just a circumstance, but it's not what defines it. Y'all with me? Right? There's two things to consider, choice and control. And that's what I had to look at based on my experience, because I did get in some trouble. But I know some people that sit in the rooms and they haven't had any of those consequences. And that's just what they are, consequences. Right? So once I put it in my body, I could not control it. I couldn't. And when I chose not to do it, I picked it up anyway. Y'all with me? I did it against my will. And if you haven't had the experience of drinking and using against your will, oh my God, that's a hard thing to explain to somebody that doesn't suffer from that, because it sounds ridiculous, right? It's like, well, I didn't want to drink, but I had to. Really? I mean, how dumb does that sound? But when you've had the experience, right? My sponsor tells the story about rocking back and forth in front of a refrigerator, tears streaming down her face, begging God to not let her open the refrigerator. And she opened it anyway and got loaded. And that became the story of my life as a teenager and a young adult, that I did this over and over and over. And I tried to make it social. Did anybody else do that? They were like, let's shift gears from the Jesus people to the people that are running around in the bars and the dope houses so that we can... It looks social when you're all kind of doing the same thing. But then when the people that you're running with are like, seriously? You're going to need to reel that in a little bit. You're like, oh, gross. Anybody else in here had an intervention done on that? All right. Had the bartenders tell you you need to slow it down? I mean, rude. You know, I had an intervention done on me with the people that I was drinking with, which was a shock to me. Right? But they weren't real bright about it, and they did it over the phone. You know? I love that. My friends are stupid. And so, you know, they had gotten together, and I knew something was going on because they didn't invite me to go out to the bar. I'm like, where is everybody, and what's going on? Like, you can sense there's something happening. It's like, there's a little meeting going on somewhere. And so they call me on the phone, and I'm at the cemetery with a couple of guys in the back of a truck loaded, because that's normal. And I get to the phone, and it's my friend who moved to Chicago, my best friend, love this girl. And she calls me and begins to proceed to tell me that if I don't stop doing what I'm doing, she's going to blow the whole thing. And she's going to let everybody in on what I'm doing, and she knows all the facts. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, I start to panic, and nothing will sober you like an intervention. You're like, on point. You know, and I begin to tell her, okay, you're right, and I 100% agree. I'm taking it too far. You know, you start playing the game, and you know, I agree, and I've already reeled it in, and I've already taken necessary steps, and I'm already doing these things, and all is well. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I've got to learn to lie better. Like, I need to stay away from some of these people. They're meeting, and they're piecing it together, right? The big book talks about leading the double life. It's real bad when you set it all up and then the players start to connect the dots on their own. It's a frightening moment. So I had that done, and you know, it is what it is. I did not reel it in. I dropped out of school. I stopped working. Told professors I had mono. I mean, it's just like the lies were endless, and they all started to roll together to the point that I didn't remember any of them. I stopped working and started working for my parents, because you don't really have to show up when you work for your family and they tolerate your nonsense. And they did. They didn't know what to do with me. They're like, you know, she suffers from depression and she's got severe anxiety. And these things are true, but it's not my problem. My problem is alcoholism, right? And so I continued to drink and drink. And what started out as a party and fun when I was young suddenly has turned into I'm alone in my garage drinking myself to death, day in, day out. It's not fun, and it becomes a real sick and dark world. Things that used to would have turned my stomach and that I would have judged other people for are suddenly a normality in my life. You know, and it's just gotten sort of ridiculous to the point of, I remember and why are you wearing the most ridiculous clothes when you get arrested? Anybody? It just popped into my head. It was so bad. So I think the first time I got arrested, I was wearing these flannel pajama pants and no shoes and no socks and a bright orange t-shirt. I was 100 pounds overweight. Yeah, real cute. You drink a case of beer a day. It was a bright orange t-shirt that said, "Have a nice beer." And so I remember thinking, this has got to stop. Like, this is so, it's funny to me now because I'm recovered. It wasn't funny 9 years ago. It was my life. And I'm crying to the police officer. He's like, "Why are you drinking? Is there a reason?" And I'm like, think. You know, my parents are divorced, and I'm really upset about it. I was like 21 at that time. My parents divorced when I was 6. But I just, like, I'm always reaching because I'm not awake. I do not deal in reality. I do not deal in fact. I'm emotional. I'm reactionary, and I'm a liar. That's the way that I've become. And so this is how I live my life. So I remember, you know, sitting in jail, and I make the phone calls, and it's all super dramatic. And my mom comes to pick me up, and, you know, she rolls up in her, you know, awesome Hummer, and then I'm, like, stumbling out, and we have to take my new friend home. Trying to fly and drop people off. My mom's like that real classy lady who's got the master's degree, who's in the Miss Texas pageant, who doesn't understand what my problem is. You know, I mean, her solution to me growing up, I remember going to her and being like, I'm not well, and you have, like, the sputtering where you say the thing, and you're like, "I need help," and them going, "You need to knock it off. You need to grow up. You need to make better decisions. You need to reel it in," and you're thinking, "Yes, but how?"
Right.
You know, it's like, absolutely, is there a path? You know, it's not that I didn't want to be a good person. I did, because inherently we all are. Whatever you guys are sitting in here thinking about yourselves, it's not true. Alcoholism and addiction is already talking to you because you've already detoxed and telling you that you're not worth this and this is going to be too hard and it's too much, and it's a lie. It's just a lie. So just please know that. So she's this beautiful woman. She picks me up, and, you know, it's like, one more time you see that look in your family's eyes of like, when is she going to get it together? You know, and the answer is, I don't know. By this time in my life, everybody has moved out of my home. I've got a custom-built home, a new car. Like, I live in this really nice subdivision. I've got a couple of roommates. They're gone. The lights don't come on in my home. The only lights you see is a flicker of the television in the background, and I only keep that on because it's just weird to be silent. Right? My mind's running 100 miles an hour. There's beer cans in the front yard. The grass is overgrown. My truck is parked sideways in the driveway. I'm standing in the front yard half naked all the time smoking cigarettes. Like, it's a nice little family neighborhood, and this is me here. Hi, disaster. You know, and it's like, growing up, if you'd have pulled me aside at 14 and said, "Baby doll, here's how it's going to play out for you," I'd have said, "No, ma'am, no, sir. That's my father. He's the alcoholic. He's the one that needs to get it together." You couldn't have convinced me that it was going to turn out that way, because why my case is different? You don't understand. I'm just about to reel this in. Anybody else feel that way? Just about to get it under control. And if it gets that bad, I'll stop. That's the biggest delusion I ever fell for. If it gets any worse, I'll reel it in. You bust your butt on every little level that you set for yourself. If it becomes a problem at work, I'll quit. If my family gets upset, I'll quit. If I freak out my kids, I'll quit. Who in here that has kids? You love your kids? I bet you do. If you could have quit for them, would you have already done so? Absolutely. Absolutely. But my book tells me I'm beyond human aid. I'm absolutely beyond human aid. Because if there is a job or a man that will fix you, go get it. Mm-hmm. Go get it and run at it 100 miles an hour like your life depends on it. If you can stay sober because the judge said so, cool. Peace. I don't know nothing about that. I'm talking about penciling in time. You know, because I know that whatever she says to me is not going to keep me sober. You ever had the experience of sitting across the table from your probation officer and thinking, this is going to be a short-lived conversation because I'm about to be in a lot of trouble because I can't stop doing what I'm doing? And I want to. I really do. And so I lived that way for a very long time. My father got sober when I was 10. Remember charter hospitals? That was a good time. Right? So he gets sober at one of those charter hospitals, and it's all about the vitamins and feel good and let's do this and let's do that. And he has zero idea what alcoholism and drug addiction is. Zero. So he walks out, maintains his sobriety, and he's like that person that's like, I've been sober for 2 years and I'm really happy about it. And you're like, are you sure? You know, and it's like almost a relief when he drinks, even though I was terrified as a child for him to relapse. When he relapsed, it's kind of like, well, at least he's okay. He's got a solution at least now, you know? And so we start drinking together when I'm about 17, 18, something like that, which really didn't go over well with the rest of our family at all. You know, just was inappropriate on so many levels. But, you know, he's a good drinking buddy. He is. But, you know, when it got time to stop and the attention started shifting to me, I threw him under the bus about his drinking. You know, and I got to tell you, that man is the only man that's ever held my heart, ever. But if you come close to my drinking, I'll cut you in a minute. Why? Because when it comes to alcoholism and addiction, we're incredibly selfish and dishonest. Why? Because we can't not be. We just can't, right? And this is the cool thing is that this is what these people will teach you how to do. Because we don't know. So when you're sitting in your meeting with your program director and thinking, why in God's name are we even talking about this? What does this have to do with anything? You'll see. Keep that in the back of your mind. You will see. Because we don't know how to do this. We don't. I sure didn't. My only experience with Alcoholics Anonymous was that he went to meetings ever so often. Well, that obviously didn't work, right? Because he relapsed. So when it gets time for me to get sober and I'm crying, it's so funny that y'all are here tonight. I'm sitting alone in my house and I'm crying and I've got a bottle of liquor in my hand and chain smoking. And I'm throughout this period of time, I've seen the Dr. Phil show, because I love Dr. Phil, and I'm watching this young boy who gets some help, and I'm thinking, God, I wish somebody would do that for me. Somebody would help me, somebody would understand, and guys, I didn't know what was wrong with me. When I'm sitting there, I never sat on a bar stool and said, man, I hate that I'm suffering from this allergy in my body and obsession in my mind that's fueled by the spiritual mountain. I didn't know. I said, I hate that I'm a bad person. I hate that I don't care about myself or anybody around me. And I'm watching somebody get something different. And it's curious to me how you could be sober and happy. It's weird, isn't it? It's weird to think about. I had no idea about it. So there comes a point in which I go home to do an intervention on my dad. I'm loaded, but I'm going to go do an intervention on him. Because I'm still trying to run that game with all my family members that I'm well, and bless his heart, we need to really look at him. I mean, God Almighty, selfish. So I go home to do an intervention on him, and he's too out there for it to even function, to even participate in it. And so I remember sneaking back to his bedroom, and he's standing in the mirror, and he's talking to himself. God, there's no lonelier place to be. Standing in the mirror, and he's doing that sway, and he's talking to himself, trying to convince himself of something. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that's me. That's me. And the fear wasn't that I'm going to die soon. I was hoping that. I did. The fear was, I believe he was 50 at the time, and I was 22. The fear was I could make it that long. I could live the way we're living until I'm 50. Knowing how bad it is already. And I just went, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I drive out on the back roads. Anybody else do that when you're upset? Or drive the country back roads. Listen to some George Strait. He solves it all. So we're out on the back roads. I say we, it's just me. All the live long day. Me and a case of beer strapped in. I don't wear a seatbelt, but I strap that in. Riding around drinking, smoking. God, it just is so pitiful. Like, some of you guys were really partying it up, and you've got some amazing stories. I'm like, I'm such the busted drunk. You know what I mean? Like, the one who wakes up on the urine-stained mattress all day, every day. You said all the normal people went, oh my God. I spotted you now. I know where you are. That's how I lived my life. I didn't clean my house. It was disgusting. I didn't participate in life. I didn't answer the phone. I was weird. The only person that had any interaction with me was the guy at the drive-through beer store. He also sold me the cigarettes. People didn't touch me for a long time, rightfully so. But I remember every once in a while somebody's hand would graze me and the touch would freak me out. He was so lost in this world, so lost. So I'm driving on this back road and I call my mom, who I fear, and she said, oh baby, how's your dad? And is everything okay? Did you guys do the intervention? And I go, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic and I need some help. And as soon as I'm like, oh dear God, and I'm trying to like throw it back in, you know? I go, oh, because if I admit it, I might have to do something about it. And guys, I didn't want to drink again ever. And I was terrified to never drink again. You been there? That's a crux. That's a crossroad. My literature talks about that. Being at the jumping off point. It's a good place to be. Doesn't feel good. It's the perfect place to be. So, I mean, oh my God, my mother, she was on it. Like, it took 2 seconds, and she's like calling lawyers and calling. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? You know. And she's like, maybe we could do like an IOP, or maybe you could see a counselor. I mean, I've done everything under the sun to be okay. We've medicated, we've dipped, we've dunked, we've talked about feelings, we've been religious, we've done it all. I need to go away. Like, I'm clear on that. I cannot get away from alcohol long enough even to detox, much less just get even thinking in the right direction. You know, and so she's flipping through the pages of a Denton phone book, of all things, and finds a facility down in South Texas, and we get ready to send me there. There's really not a lot of people to call. You know, we call the lawyer, we call the PO, and, you know, people I did call, I lied to. You know, oh, my dad's really having a hard time, and I need to go away for roughly 28 to 30 days. My phone won't be working during this time period. And it's like, you know, I go to my dad's all the time. He's out in East Texas. The phone works. Like, I should have come up with something better. But I just, God, I'm so tired. You guys get here tired, right? You think that's about booze and dope. It's not. It's about running. About lying. About running shadow games on everybody and everything. That's what that life is about, and it's exhausting. Exhausting, exhausting. It's even more tiring to do it in sobriety, and I know because I've done that too. So I get down to this facility. I detox with my mother on the way down there. Oh, awesome. I didn't know you could show up loaded. Was real pissed when I got there. You know, so then they start talking about the big book, and I'm like, what is a big book? I mean, I'm envisioning my PO telling me, you need to find a sponsor, and you need to go to recovery, you need to get a big book. I mean, even she knew. Turns out she was in recovery. And so I'm envisioning like this giant like book, like a big scroll, you know, and I was like, oh God. And the guy that was teaching big book had a miniature one, more confusing, right? So I wave it around in the big book and I'm like, that's quite tiny. You know, like, I don't know about that, but whatever. And so he starts talking about things I've never heard about, ever. He starts talking about loss of choice, loss of power, and I'm like, oh my God. He starts unraveling the 12 steps in front of me, and all of a sudden it's not about me being a piece of you-know-what. It's about me being afflicted with the disease of alcoholism. And the pieces start to come together. And I'm like, oh my God, I might could get well. I'm on the phone with my dad in the little phone room. Did you know there's a book? Did you know that there's, you know, and he's like, whoop. You know, he doesn't know. He's in this little crap hole town in East Texas where there's one meeting where everybody's sober and not working a program. Why? Because they don't need to. Because they're not alcoholics. Telling him he doesn't need to do it either. Now, that's on him. He could have picked up the book at any time, and he didn't, but I just felt the segue, so I went with it. Excuse me. My brain catches every train. But another reason why we go to meetings where they're talking about the book and not about themselves. The end. Okay. I'm back. So, anyway. So, I'm really excited about this book thing, and I'm really excited about there's this recovery deal, and I have zero capacity to understand what my life could be like. And then they start talking about abstinence from all substances. Right? You remember that shocking moment where you went, hold up, wait a minute. I'm a pothead, what do you mean? I don't understand. Yeah, abstinence from all substances, and because something has to replace it. That feeling when your shoulders drop and you can breathe in your own skin, better by God happen when you work these steps. You know why? Because if it doesn't, you're going back to the substance. The end. I promise you. That's why they hound on it in this facility. Work the steps, work the steps, work the steps. Why? Because something has to change internally. Because bourbon changed that for me. It did. I could go from irritable, restless, discontent. Everybody and everything is on my nerves. I'm frightened. I don't like to interact with people. I'm shy. I'm awkward. All these things. And all of a sudden I get a drink in me and I'm like, I'm good. It's like I tapped into all my resources, everything's at my fingertips, and anything is possible. That better happen when you work a program. It better. Otherwise, we go back to what we know works, right? It's just true. So I find this group in Dallas, and they're hardcore, like, working this program, working this book, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, because I have zero experience with recovery. My only experience is my dad went to some meetings and he drank again, so that's my capacity to understand. I don't know that this is going to work, but I go in, and they've got all these leather-bound books with their names on them, and I'm like, ooh, it's like, you know, summer camp or something, I don't know. And they've highlighted things, and they're talking in the meeting, and I don't know what they're talking about, but I begin to parrot what they're saying, right? I'm just like, I'm just always trying to be a part of, always feeling on the outskirts. And what happened is over the course of time, I tried to work the program my way. Anybody else? Right? Self-sponsorship, working some steps, not the others, and inside of 6 months, I'm crazy. Absolutely crazy. And need a drink real bad. I got in front of a woman who understood this book, and I dropped the pretenses. And isn't that the hardest thing to do? That's why circle is so uncomfortable, isn't it? You have to drop the nonsense. You're like, oh my God, I'm so exposed. I'm so vulnerable. I'm about to get a million different concerns. Right? You're sitting there like, oh God. That's because that's what real recovery looks like. Not like where we'll sit in meetings and give you concerns. That's not what I'm saying. But wouldn't that be something? I'd be in trouble all the time. But it's reality. It's for real. It's dropping the nonsense and living the double life and showing up and being awake to your world. And if you haven't experienced that yet, it sounds real bizarre, doesn't it? You're like, what is she even talking about now? Right? Because it's the fourth dimension. It's not where you live yet. And until you've had what this program calls a psychic change, you don't know. It's kind of like if you've never had an orgasm. Yes, I went there. Sucker, right? I could explain it to you. I'm sorry, there's children here. I could explain it to you all the livelong day. Until you've had it, you don't know. You don't know. It's the same thing in recovery. It's like, well, I show up in the meetings. I don't have a sponsor, and I don't work the steps, but I don't think it's going to work. Okay. Have at it. But can you drop your ego long enough to ask somebody for some help? It is painful. I showed up at this woman's house at 10 o'clock at night and said, will you help me? I knew I was going to drink. And I'm trying to figure out, should I live with my grandfather and continue and try to drink? Should I move out? I'm crazy at this point. Because everybody knows I'm in recovery. They're all happy. Yay, she's sober. All, you know, cheerleading me on. So now I'm running that game. But over here, you guys with me? But I'm crazy at that point. So I show up at her house and I'm like, will you help me? She begins to take me through the steps quickly. I have an experience quickly and it's never left me. It hasn't. I haven't had a drink in 9 years. I'm a busted drunk. Let's be clear. I'm not somebody who had two martinis at a party and decided to come to rehab. No, I'm a woman that drank every single day against her will. That's who I am. And left to my own devices and without those steps, that is my truth again today. I'm not above this. I watch people go out constantly. And it's going to sound real callous saying this, but some of you in the room have some time and you understand what I'm saying. You stay sober long enough, you're going to step over the body. Mm-hmm. You will. It gives me chills. I can't tell you how many people I watch do this for a minute while it feels good, and then when it gets too uncomfortable, they're out the door. Because I know best. God bless. Right? I'm driving my life into the ground, but I don't want to take your suggestion. God, yeah, because that's how I live. Arrogant. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm too shy to ask you for help. Get over it. It is going to be awkward. So was sex the first time, right? It was awkward. You know what you're doing? You got after it, didn't you? Right? I have to take the same mentality that I did at running at that booze, that I better run at this program. And I know you, I know everybody in this room that's a drunk and a dopey, you ought to have knocked over an old lady to get what you needed, wouldn't you? Right? You come in so, I don't know if I can make those two meetings. Really? Really? Because that wouldn't have stopped you from getting what you needed to get, was the fact that, oh, this big book study, but that's 20 minutes from my house. I'd rather just pencil in some time for getting loaded. If you still know, you're in trouble. It's one of the first things that my sponsor took out of my vocabulary, right? Watch yourself tomorrow in conversation. How many times you go, I know. And she embarrassed me. It wasn't her. It was a friend of mine, Dan, that used to do that to me. He'd go, I know. And I was like, he's so annoying. Like him sometimes. But he took that out of my vocabulary because my ego, my arrogance would drive me back to a drink every time. Every time I think I know best, I'm in trouble. I am. Because I need a program to show me how to live. Isn't that the question? The booze and the dope is no longer here. So we should all be good, right? Wrong. Why? Because what do we learn in here? Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem. I got character defects for days that this power is going to have to deal with. It is. And I didn't know how to do that. And I got involved in this group and I started asking questions. And I started saying, show me how to do this and show me how to do that. Do you think anybody knows how to sponsor initially? No, nobody knew what they were doing. They didn't. But here's the good news. It's all in the book. It's all in the book. But I've got to be willing to set aside what I think I know. And here's another thing, guys. Just because you got clean and sober doesn't mean life's going to stop happening. And that was a delusion I fell victim to. Well, as long as I'm clean and sober, then, you know, all is going to be well. It won't. You know why? Because life shows up. So I better be armed with a program that works no matter what. Because booze worked no matter what. It was always there. Always waiting. The book tells me I've got to find a new power, a power by which I can live. Because I'm clear that bourbon is a power greater than myself. Wasn't your substance? To tell you when to get up, where to go, what to do, what to say. Did you worship that? I did. No shame in my game. I worshipped alcohol because I could not do it. I just couldn't. All right, so I better find something else that I can get connected to. Because here's another thing. Some of us come in here and we don't have an issue in the world with God. And then some of us come in here and we can't even stand to hear that name mentioned. It makes us bristle. Well, what's the problem? Well, we're both loaded, right? So it doesn't really even matter where I come in on that spectrum. It just doesn't. Because some people say, well, I already know because I know God and I love God and it's all good. I'm good with this power. No, you have a knowledge of. We're talking about a connection to. And those are two very, very different things. It's not saying what you believe is wrong. It's not saying how you believe is wrong. It's saying there's another pathway to get to the same place. Y'all with me? Right? It's just a venue. That's all it is. Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous did not corner the market on God. We didn't. It apparently has been here for a long, long time before all this stuff came on the scene. But what we're talking about is an avenue to get there. But see, if I'm like you, I sit in here and I go, oh, that's the tradition. What's the step? I can get down with step 2, 6, 7, definitely not 9, 11, right? Like I'm all about working like a cafeteria style everything. But I've got to submit. Anybody else like to go to Vegas? Nobody wants to get concerned. They're like, I don't hate Vegas. You know you like it, okay? Right? So how do you play in Vegas? Do you timidly do it? No, you put it in the middle. Make a decision. Right? That's what that third step is about. And put it all in the middle. Shove it all in. Unless you do that, it's not going to work. It's just not. There's always a part of me that wants to carve out a niche for myself. I'll submit to this recovery process, but I want to take relationships and do it my way. I want to take finances and handle them over here dishonestly and think it's going to be okay. It won't. It just won't. You don't have a better way. And you know what? If we'd have found a better way, I'd be up here talking about the better way. Right? If I'd have found a loophole, you don't think I would have let you in on it? Absolutely I would. I'd be like, hey, yo, there's a door number 3 nobody's telling you about during your little circle meeting. But there's not. It's this way. This way. It is. The book is crystal clear. I'll read something to you. Nobody panic. It's not long. It's around page 25. It's one of my favorite parts of the book. It says, if you are seriously alcoholic or addict as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. Get clear on it. Anything that's not within the context of Alcoholics Anonymous, well, first 164 pages is middle-of-the-road solution. I don't care what it is. So understand that, right? It's what they talk about here. It says, we were in a position where life is becoming impossible. Where is that? Step 1. I can't choose whether or not I'm going to do this, and every time I do it, I overshoot the mark. The end. I cannot get past that. I can't get around it. If my life is impossible, it says, we have passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid. Ask yourself the question, are you not beyond human aid? If you can get sober for a circumstance, awesome. Awesome. Don't need this. But if you can't get sober for nothing and nobody, welcome. You're in the right place. says we had two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, which means Audrey can go on doing it Audrey's way as long as she wants to, and eventually I'll get loaded, but it's a heartache, right? It's like removing the alcohol and continuing to live in self-will. There's no greater pain. There's nothing to dull that out. Living the double life, you're constantly in fear, you guys know what I'm talking about? It's not fun. It's how you show up here. Initially thinking you're running game on everybody, and then come to find out that all the little program directors are all alcoholics and addicts, and they all know, they see you coming. It's so irritating. You're like, oh my God, I thought I was totally playing him. Right? And the other is to accept spiritual help. It's two things, right? So if my life in step one is I can't stop, period, then step two, it gets real simple. I can accept some spiritual help. It didn't say you understood anything. It didn't. I hope that what works for Marcia is going to work for me. I don't have to understand that, and I don't have to believe it. It says I'm going to come to believe. It didn't say you believed anything. Right? I'm going to come to believe. How? By having an experience with it. So I make a decision in that third step to accept spiritual help, but it's conditional. It says this we did because we honestly wanted to. We were willing to make the effort. These guys here can lay the program at your feet, but they will not pick it up for you. Can't. Wouldn't do you the disservice of doing that. Just wouldn't. So I've got to come at this. Either I'm willing or I'm not. Y'all with me? Right. So I make that third step decision to put this program to the test and see. What could it hurt? If it doesn't work, then I can go on my merry way getting loaded all the days that I want. But if it does work, there might be something on the other side of it that might be worth having. So I do an inventory. I do it. Yeah, it wasn't the most fun I've ever had in my whole life, but I wrote it all down. It didn't take forever. I did a fifth step and I got honest for the very first time with another human being. It was painful. Why? Because I've been running game my whole life, drunk or sober. I've been running game. So I got honest with another human being. You ever hear people say, oh, the truth will set you free? And you kind of want to punch them in the throat just a little bit, right? It will set you free once you stop doing that. But here's the thing. If I want something different, I've got to do something different. And it sounds real simple, like, oh, yeah, duh. But until you have to painfully do some things that you don't want to do, and then you get the freedom that's on the other side of it, you're like, oh, my God, I really did get what this program has to offer. And it gets real cool. Because all that stuff that the fourth and fifth step reveal, I do not have the power to change. I knew that I wasn't living the way I wanted to live, but I didn't have the power not to do it. It was real disappointing and real disheartening. But if I could have just chosen to be a better person, wouldn't I have already done so? Absolutely. So I've got to give all that stuff to God who can change it. So I get busy making amends, cleaning up the wreckage of my past, and God gets busy changing me. I don't try to change me. Because how self-centered is that? Let me think about me, talk about me, be about me. Anybody else in here sick of themselves? On their own nerves? Come on now. They're afraid to raise their hands. It's true. We know. You're tired of you. I get it. So we're going to let the power of God change me because this program is about that. It's not about, oh, me and Marcia are buddies and we sit in meetings and we hold hands and we chant. It's not about that. It's about what we do outside the rooms. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. This isn't. This is a meeting. This is cool. We get to know each other and we're buddies. Y'all really know me now. Right? It's good stuff. But it's what happens tonight when nobody's watching. Whether I practice the principles of this program or I don't. Because nobody will know the difference, right? Whether I admit to my sponsor the truth or I don't. Whether I want my pillow to hit my head to hit the pillow and fall asleep, or if I'm going to lay there and mind play every single thing because I'm living a double life in sobriety. Y'all with me? It's up to you. These people won't follow you home. When you discharge, you can go on your... Some of them might. Raise the town. When nobody's following you, and it's up to you when you leave here. Do you want this or do you not? You get to make that decision, and if you do, bust a move. Right? It's like, I don't know what to do, and I'm awkward, and I'm shy, and I'm embarrassed. Welcome to your tribe. None of us know what the hell we're doing. We jumped in, right? So I get busy making amends. God goes to work on me. And then the question becomes, how do I live now? Because steps 4 through 9 are designed to take care of the past. Thank God. Right? But then the question becomes, how do I live in today? Because here's how most of us have lived. I'm in fear of the future, and I'm terrified you're going to find out about the past. Y'all with me? I cannot be present. I cannot be awake. I cannot use all these happy terms that everybody keeps talking about because I don't know how to live in today. Well, that's where step 10 comes. So I can clean it up as it goes, right? It's like that little Tide pin, right? You got a clean shirt on. It's been to the laundry. You're good to go. And then you spill something on it. It's like, dang. You just Tide pin it off. That's step 10. Do not complicate it. Don't complicate it. You're going to have to do some things and they're uncomfortable. Hey, step 11, prayer and meditation, is just like any relationship. It's talking and listening. It's communicating. The relationship that Marcia and I had a number of years ago is not the relationship we had today. Why? Because we communicate. It has to grow and evolve and change. And it's our friendship. Nobody gets to tell us what that looks like. Guess what? This is your relationship with this power that will save you. And nobody gets to tell you what that looks like. How cool is that? Because I would ask my sponsor, some people do it with a timer, and some people sit in the lotus position, and some people, and she's like, I don't care. But everybody does. This is your relationship with God, Audrey, and you get to have what you want to have. And I'm like, oh my God, there's a lot of freedom in that. And it was terrifying because I don't know how to have a relationship with God. I know how to quote scripture, but I don't know how to have a relationship. That's what this step showed me, so that the answers come. Because this program is so not about alcohol and dope. It's just not. It's about how do I walk into a room and be so connected to a power and awake to what the big book calls the fourth dimension that I know immediately I need to come and talk to you. Why am I awake to that? Is it because Marcia whispered in my ear, hey, go talk to that young man over there. He really needs to hear what you have to say. No. It's because my spirit is awake. I believed my whole life, but I was asleep. Mark still needs to talk about that. You're asleep, dreaming you're awake. True words never spoken. And what happens is my spirit wakes up. I get real good. And by good, I don't mean good in like behavior. I still act up a lot. So let's be clear about that. I get real good internally. Everything settles. Would anybody else like to have their mind stop 100 miles an hour? Be alone at perfect peace and ease. Not have to blare the radio. Not have to be on the phone. Not have to busy yourself. Because you could just be. It's good stuff. Right? And when that happens, I go and tell other people about it. See how simple this just got? This is not rocket science. It's not hard. It's uncomfortable. Get over it. Did anybody do anything uncomfortable to get loaded? Bet you did. Sign on the dotted line. Come on, let's go. And then I'm going to learn how to practice principles because we didn't know how to do that either. We had a lot of ideas about what it should look like and we judged a lot of people based on them falling short, if you're like me. Right? But I don't know how to apply it to my own life. It can be that simple. And guys, if it wasn't good, we wouldn't do it. Do you think I'd drive from Dallas to Austin to tell you how cool it is on a Saturday night if it wasn't? No. Me and M. Stone be at the corner bar. I mean, they're not paying me to do that. Like, really? Because it's that good that I can't not talk about it. On the off chance that one of you knuckleheads is going to want to do it. Right? Or one of you family members is going to hear me say, you can get okay no matter what. You can. My dad got sober right behind me and died sober. And it was a really cool experience. I got to help take him through the work. Right? Because his sponsor couldn't get to him. I got to take him through his second and third step. How awesome is that? We were running buddies, drinking buddies. And we got to go through the work together. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not the power of me. It's awesome stuff. Right? My mom is not sober. My sisters are not sober. It just is what it is. And I get to be okay anyway. That's cool. I get to be okay no matter what. It's probably my favorite line in the big book. I'll read it and I swear to you I'll sit down because I heard somebody's phone beat. We're out of time. Right? On page 98, my buddy DJ read this one time and it stuck with me forever and ever. It says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man. He can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house. It works for everybody that does it. And you're never in a position where you can't do it. Right? So don't say, yeah, but you don't understand. I don't care. I don't. I care whether or not you do this work. Cool? If anybody's going back to Dallas, Fort Worth, guy, girl, alcoholic, addict, I don't care. Come see me. Let me help get you connected. I know that y'all have aftercare programs. Let me tell you about some cool meetings where they're studying the book and what they're doing at this facility, they're doing out there. It's important to get connected to that. Don't go sit in a crazy meeting. Don't do it. It won't work. All right, come see me, please. I love you guys. Thank you so much for letting me come.